Welcome to Southern Man Western Town.
Welcome, everybody. This is Jeff Lawrence, your host of Southern Man, Western Town. Got a little bit of news on the front, but what I'm going to try to do today for those, for the few of you, the very few that have been listening to my stupid titled musical journey, this is going to be like part five of that, and basically going to talk about Utah. So how I got to Utah and got into the music thing and all that. So the weird thing about it is just this weird part about how I got to Utah in the first place is, so I'd been I'm in Georgia still, working at my dad's pawn shop, working at a horse stable on the weekend, playing in a country band and a rock band, I think. Mainly trying to get into the country thing. Recorded one album, so called Scars. I started getting really into the old West. Like, I don't know why, it was really weird because no one else was into it, but I was into it. I think what it was, I saw some, you know, like cowboy movies, like Young Guns and Tombstone and shit like that. Wyatt Earp. And I just started thinking about, you know, wondering what the real story was. I knew, you know, Hollywood wasn't really going to tell the whole story. So I'd go to, and then, remember, this is before computers and all that. This is like 90s, probably 98 or 97 or something at this point. I'm actually just kind of really getting into it and trying to, dreaming about coming out west. So, if I had a computer, everything would have been a lot easier. I could have researched all this stuff right there on my phone or whatever, but I'm going to Barnes & Noble, checking out books, buying books, just watching all these movies that, at the time, playing in country bands, and got a divorce, and then I ended up, started dating another girl, ended up being my second wife. We started dating, and I ended up going back into a heavy metal band called Shovelhead, which I talked a little bit about last time. But I'd talked to her about wanting to move out west, and while I was married to my first wife, I was by myself. This is a weird thing. I was by myself one night, and I was I don't know how this occurred, but I was I was sleeping on the couch. I don't know where my first wife was, if she was home or in the bed or what the deal was, or if we were broke up or what. But I was sleeping on my couch, and about 4 a.m. I just happened to wake up and I see a commercial. I had the TV on. There was a commercial on. There was a guy on there talking about selling used cars. And I looked like a double take, and I was like, I know that guy. And then turned out he was my best friend's brother from when I had my best friend from childhood, up from like age 6 up to like age 18, and he had ended up moving out to Utah, but his brother was still, you know, in Georgia selling used cars, president of the Used Car Association. So I got the number off the TV that he gave, called it the next day, got my friend's number, who I'd been looking for. I'd been looking for my friend for like a year, ever since he had, not a year, more than that, like 10 years since he had moved out to Utah. He moved out when he was 18. I'm probably, I don't know, 26, 27 at this point. Got his number, contacted him, visited him with my first wife once and a couple of times without her. So I decided I'm going to move to Utah. That was my way to get to West. I didn't really want to move to Utah at first. That wasn't in none of my cowboy books. You know, it was kind of a Mormon history. I was thinking more New Mexico, California, Arizona, South Dakota, them type places. But nonetheless, that was my ticket to get out. He said he would put me to work. So I'd come to Utah and work for him. I was like, okay. Now, it sounds easy enough, but I'm in Georgia. I got a good job. Just started dating a girl. At this point, I talked her into it. She was going to move out here with me. We ended up getting married. We went out to Las Vegas, got married. This guy, my friend, came out and hung out with us that day. And so we had the plan. So one day we packed up my apartment, put it all in a U-Haul, and we're about to go. Then we chickened out. I don't know what happened. It was something to do with her parents, I think. So we took all our stuff, put it in a storage unit, went and rented a duplex back in Georgia, stayed another 6 months. And finally, I got up the nuts to do it. I got my friend to come out, drive the U-Haul back to Utah with all our stuff in it, as we followed in my truck, pulling another car behind it. I had two cars. So finally get to Utah. Now, musically, how this ties into music, I'm thinking I'm done. I'm like 29, 30 years old. I'm done, you know. I don't know anybody out there. I don't even know what the music deal is out there. And I pretty much was done. Came out to Utah, just worked, and I loved it. I mean, I loved being out west. I loved being outside and going up into the canyons and the mountains, and was having a damn good time. Loved it. Well, didn't miss Georgia any, that's for sure. And then I ended up getting divorced from my second wife. She moved back to Florida or Georgia somewhere. And so I'm back on my own. So then I started dating another girl. I'm working security at part-time here. Start dating another girl. She's an artist. She kind of getting... I'm playing the guitar the whole time during all this. I'm just not doing anything, you know, really, as far as gigs or anything would go. But she kind of talks me into getting back into it a little bit. And I started writing songs again. I recorded a couple of songs. And kind of left it at that. But then one day, this is after me and her broke up, one day I'm working with my friend. We're out doing, like, we used to put up signs all over Utah, flagpoles all over the west and stuff. So we're driving up in a town called Holiday, Utah, kind of a nicer area, Salt Lake. And I see a sign that says bass teacher wanted. And I used to be, I was a bass player for many years, those of you following along. So I said, I could probably do that. I'll call him and see what the deal is. I could maybe do it part-time. So guy says, yeah, I got like 10 bass students. If you want to come maybe work one day a week from like, 3 o'clock in the afternoon to 8 at night or something. This was at On Track Music. So I'm saying, yeah, I can do this. Now at the time I read music, and at the time these guys were all reading tabs, and I didn't read tabs. I knew what they were, but I just never did it. I either read notes or just, I was mainly into writing my own music. I didn't care about cover tunes and stuff. Never really did. But I'm doing that. He gives me a little test. I'm reading the tab upside down and stuff. But once he told me I was reading it wrong, I flipped it over and got it first try. So I'm doing that, working my other job one day a week doing this, kind of moving along. Then he, one day comes in and says, one of my guitar teachers is leaving. He's going to school to learn how to be a recording engineer. So, do you want to be his guitar? Do you want to take all his guitar students? He has like 40. This would be a full-time deal. And I'm like, Yeah, I guess. I talked to my friend, said, look, I got this opportunity to teach music instead of busting my ass. And he's like, yeah, man, go do it. And I said, all right. So I took the job. So now I'm a full-time guitar teacher in on-track music. This goes on for about a year. I get remarried about... trying to think how this played out. About a year, I guess. And then I get remarried again, my third wife. While I'm teaching, I ended up playing in one of my students' band. Her name was Feline. She did like folk, kind of 90s folk, kind of acoustic music. I ended up playing mandolin with her and guitar, and we put a band together. And we played a couple of shows and recorded one CD. And then another student of mine named Eric, we ended up forming a band together. He was an older guy. He was not as old as me, but pretty close. And he knew some people, and we ended up forming a band called Eviction, and we put out an album. We never did any gigs, but we put out a pretty good album. He had his own studio and wrote songs and sang and all that. So I'm kind of getting back into it now. Well, yeah, like I said, after a year goes by, I'm like, I can just open my own place closer to my house. So I rented my own studio. A lot of my students followed me over there, and I started a place called Dixie Music Instruction. And Dixie tied into me being from the South, but, now, of course, I'd be canceled if I called it that. But the main reason I did it was I was in Dixie Shopping Center. That's what the shopping center was called, Dixie Shopping Center. So I was Dixie Music Instruction. And so I started teaching, had my own business. I even opened up a second location, and I was doing pretty well. I'm still playing in the two groups and all. And then one day I get a call from Park City Conservatory, and they offered me a job paying me as much more by the hour than I was making running my own business. So I ended up closing my one location, taking that job in Park City, all the way up there. It was about 30 minutes away. Kind of during all this, I go to Canada to play guitar at my friend's wedding in Kelowna, Canada. I come back, and my third wife says she wants a divorce. Now, we'd had a kid at this point. And, before all this, I'm kind of jumping ahead. I actually did record two more albums. I recorded More Scars, which is an instrumental album that I recorded, Heart of the Sun, which I did a really, I don't know if anybody's ever done this, which you can listen to all these songs on Spotify and all that, but Heart of the Sun was an album I recorded after my son was born, my oldest son, Matt. We had actually brought him into the studio, and I taped a microphone to his, taped a microphone onto his chest. Believe me, this was not painful. There's no child abuse involved. So you could hear his heartbeat go boom, 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 boom over the studio. And I played a song using his heartbeat as the drums or the beat to the song. It also picked up a lot of like gurgling noises and stuff in his stomach. It was pretty cool. And that's why I called it Heart of the Sun. But it's a whole like, I was into Alison Krauss and stuff at the time. It was a whole like album I did with a lot of bluegrass instruments, even though it's not a bluegrass album at all. And anyway, so I jumped back ahead. So I get back from Canada playing my friend's wedding, and my third wife wants a divorce. So what I did is I packed up all my shit, went to Park City, rented a little one-bedroom apartment right in the middle of town, which was really cool, right in the mountains, right in the middle of downtown. Nowadays, I couldn't do that. It would cost three times what I was paying then, maybe probably five times. But then now I'm working, teaching at Park City Conservatory, getting all kinds of accolades. It's a little more of a big deal. The conservatory, I was teaching, I was playing a lot of classical music, a lot of classical guitar, teaching bass, teaching electric guitar. I basically built their electric guitar program. I'm bringing in tons of students, tons of money to the place. And all that's going pretty well. Starting to get a lot of gigs out of it. And then I just decided one day, I'm just going to start my own band. And just, so I kind of started doing that. I started my own band, and out of using people from the conservatory. I got the saxophone teacher to be my sax player, drum teacher to be my drummer, bass player that I don't remember where I came across the bass player at. Actually, he wasn't teaching there yet, but I actually did get him a job there. And then using him on the bass and another guy on the bass sometimes when he couldn't make it. And then he knew, the bass player knew a trumpet player, got him on. And yeah, just had a, then pretty soon I got an 8-piece jam band and I'm playing all the bars in Park City pretty regular. End up, you know, getting through my divorce, playing a lot of gigs. Ended up calling it the Jeff Lawrence Group. Ended up getting the violin teacher there too. We ended up having like an 8-piece band, like I said, playing everywhere. Ended up recording 2 albums with that band called, it's under the Jeff Lawrence Group. And one's called The Crossing. And one is called Harmony and Chaos. Both of them are pretty cool tunes if you get a chance to listen. You can also hear a lot of that stuff on High Desert Jazz, my release, where a lot of those songs off the Crossing LP are on that. So, doing that, and end up meeting my wife now, who I'm married to now. We weren't married then. We just were dated for about a year, kind of stayed in Park City, lived together for about a year. Still playing all over the place. I'm starting to move my band into a 3-piece band. I'm getting kind of tired of not making any money, not doing, you know, doing all the, a lot of my bands kind of dissipating, going different directions and stuff. Ended up during this period recording another album called Experiments in Open Tunings, which is what that was. I just did a different tuning on the guitar for every song. There's a different open tuning. And I think I recorded, I'm probably leaving another album out or something here somewhere. And then did that. Still playing, using my three. At this point, we're kind of moved on from the conservatory. I stayed there a year. Then I just started going out on my own, teaching a lot of the students I had at the conservatory. I just started making my own service where I'd go to their house. Some people would come to my house in Park City. I'd go to their house. I was making good money teaching all over, teaching classes at Park City School District, which I still do some. And then I did the same at, I was doing it at the college down in Heber City, Utah's Valley University, also over doing that in 2 different locations, teaching classes, going pretty good. And then wife ended up getting pregnant with my second child, and we decided we needed to move down to Salt Lake again to get closer to the hospitals and stuff that we were going to use. So we ended up renting an apartment down there. At this point, I get a job at the School of Rock, which at the time was Paul Green School of Rock. Now it's just the School of Rock. And I ended up using a drummer and a bass player from there, which is, ended up being the best band I've ever had. And we were still Jeff Lawrence Group. Ended up being Jeff Lawrence and Warhorse. Recorded a couple of CDs with that. With those guys, Trevor Alder and Van Christensen. I still use Van on the drums when I can. He's my favorite. Trevor was my favorite bass player. Moved back to Cleveland, Ohio, where he was from. Still kind of keep in touch with him sometimes. And still teaching all other places too. I'm kind of going, driving all over, teaching crazy stuff. I'm kind of driving all over the place, teaching to people's houses and stuff down in Salt Lake. So we have the baby, and me and my wife have the baby. We decide we don't want to live down in Salt Lake. We want to go back up towards Park City. We can't afford Park City. I mean, if anybody knows anything about it, it's like living in Vail, Colorado, or Aspen or something. It's just crazy prices, and couldn't really move back to the one bedroom I was living in with now we got, 3 kids and 2 step kids coming over here and there, and my kid anyway. My wife had a kid. Then we got this kid together. So we move into this 2-bedroom apartment, and it's kind of weird. It was, we ended up staying there. I'm teaching still all over the place. driving all over the place to teach. I'm teaching them a class one night, and this lady says, you know, you just should just move in this house I got for rent. So we moved down to a town called Camas, which we really love. It's kind of near Park City, it's in the mountains, and we moved into a really nice house, thinking we're having it made. And, you know, I'm still teaching all over the place, playing everywhere, playing at the local places. I even ran for mayor of the town, which was kind of crazy. I lost that election, but ran for mayor of Camas. Opened up a store in Camas, a music store there. But right before that, I'm kind of jumping ahead again. I did open a music store in Salt Lake City for a bit. It didn't pan out. And then I just kind of moved it into the town I was in, Camas. Did pretty well with that. And then ended up moving to Heber City, where my third child was born. And I'm teaching at another music store there, and just all over the place. I'm doing crazy stuff. I'm driving an hour and a half through the mountains to teach four kids in town way far away. But it was worth it. I was making money. Finally, we're living in Midway, Utah, near Heber, and it's kind of all coming to a head. I've played millions of gigs. I can't even, you know, I'm not even going into all the gigs I've played, but I was playing hundreds of gigs. At the time, also playing bass in a band called Monrovia. It was a really shitty band, but we played, playing bass for a guy named Scott that ran the Monrovia, and we played everywhere, open for Nazareth and all kinds of stuff. I was making good money playing bass with him, playing guitar in my own band. During all this time, I'm playing guitar at New Pilgrim Baptist Church. This is kind of before then and after. And getting money there. I'm playing with some good musicians there. And then it kind of all came to a head. The economy kind of tanked. People stopped taking lessons. The people I was giving lessons to were kind of growing up and doing other things. And just wasn't, you know, the gigs were kind of drying up at the time. I kind of ran the course of playing my three-piece jam band stuff, and different things were happening. So we decided to move all the way to St. George, Utah. We did that mainly because we're in Midway, and one day it was like 20 below zero, and we're like, fuck this, and we're done. We moved down to St. George, where it's hot all the time, for the most part, a little bit too hot. I get a job down there teaching, and it kind of falls apart, but we ended up buying a little cabin on the mountains. I ended up becoming a cab driver down there. It was kind of rough. We couldn't find anything. The music scene was non-existent, even though I finally met a guy on the bass named Dwight that worked at a radio station, and he played bass, and we were able to put together a little three-piece band and play some gigs in Nevada and Arizona and places like that. Nothing major, just cover tunes and constant struggle. He's always want me to play older stuff than I was playing. And the weird thing happened during this, almost as soon as we moved to St. George, I get a call from Jaegertown, bass player Jesse. Jaegertown was the biggest country band in Utah at the time. Now they're still pretty close to up there. And they played in front of 1,000 people every time they played, opened for all kinds of famous people, toured all over the place. Full-on production. Wouldn't you know it, they call me and want me to be in their band, and after I move 5 hours south. But I kind of talk them into it. I'm like, look, man, I'll come up there and do your gigs. I'll just drive up. I don't care. I got a son up there anyway in Salt Lake. I got to come up there and see him anyhow. Let's just do it. So they said, okay. And I ended up playing with Jaegertown for a year, opened up for Bellamy Brothers, Restless Heart, Tracy Lawrence, a lot of other people I'm leaving out, playing some really good gigs. But it's to the point where, you know, I'm not making really any money. They're making tons of money, but you have to put money back into getting more merch, which I wasn't getting any of the profit out of. I was having to help pay their van and bus payment, which I didn't get anything out of. I ended up recording an album with them. It was their third album. And it was really shitty. I mean, it's not a shitty album. It's actually a good album. There's no really standout hit songs on it, but there is some good playing on it. I feel like I did pretty good. But they had band members take turns coming to the studio, watching me record this thing. They already knew they were going to throw me out of the band while I'm recording this album. And it was just a mess. So after we recorded it, I did one more gig. We opened for Brett Eldridge and Black Hawk and some festival. And then what I started doing is taking gigs with my own band and not showing up for the Eagertown gigs, never having to get fill-ins. And then they ended up letting me go, which I was kind of glad at the time. I was making just as much money playing on my own and not having to deal with all the bullshit. So that's kind of ended that. And then, you know, after about 3 years in St. George, where the economy sucked, we couldn't find good jobs. I'm still playing gigs, but they mostly all sucked. Using various different drummers and stuff. And so we decided, fuck it, we're going to move back to Atlanta, Georgia, where I'm from. So we packed up the family, moved them back to, actually, we moved to Cartersville, Georgia, about 30 minutes north of Marietta, where I was from originally. And there I'm recording big time. I met a guy named Donnie Hammonds, who had a studio out in the middle of nowhere, but it was a good studio. Donnie Hammonds, a band, he plays all over the place. And ended up starting to write like crazy. I ended up recording three or four different instrumental albums, kind of smooth jazz albums, with him. One Georgia Jazz Textures, as the Guitar and I, the Listener Effect, leaving another one out. Leaving one of the albums out, I can't think of what it is. Writing a lot of stuff. I went on a TV show that reached millions of people. I think it was Good Day Atlanta or something. No, or Atlanta and Company. Played a couple songs on that. Ended up opening for Larry Carlton, which is the best thing I did while I was there. We were there for 4 years. Did a show with Larry Carlton. Really cool. I started teaching guitar lessons for Pontiera Music. I got tons of students making good money. Taught a lesson to Joe Queer of the punk band The Queers. teaching at two locations, driving a BMW, thinking I'm the shit. Played a couple of gigs with my old friend Philip Howell from the old days and Charles Densford from the old bands I talked about before. Just kind of hit them up after being gone 10 years, 13 years I think I was gone. And then I hooked up back up with these guys. They recorded a couple of my tracks for me. We did two or three gigs, and then Charles ended up moving to Dallas, Texas. After 4 years, I said, fuck it. I didn't really like being back in Georgia. Wasn't getting into the gigs that I wanted to get. Couldn't really get accepted into the jazz scene, which is kind of a common thing where you're playing smooth jazz. The regular jazz guys don't want you. So we're gonna move to Colorado out of the blue. So I get a job teaching guitar in Colorado, and I go out there and visit, and I got basically two jobs teaching guitar in Colorado. So me and my family move back to Colorado. Or not back to Colorado, we pick up, move to Colorado, and it's a disaster. We move into this little cabin that I kind of rented sight unseen. We get there and it's just a disaster. We couldn't stay there. I won't go into the details, but ended up being a lawsuit and all that, and we ended up basically homeless for a couple of days. We're living in motel rooms, and luckily I had a couple $1,000. And we didn't know what to do. We didn't know whether we'd go back to Atlanta. We didn't really want to. Didn't have no reason to. I'd left all my jobs there. And my wife's family still lived in Utah. And then I called my old friend again, Aaron, and then the one I'd originally moved to Utah to work with in the first place, and just asked him if there was any way he had any work. Just turns out one of his employees left and he needed somebody. So we pack up a U-Haul, move back to Utah, which is, you know, only a state away. We're in Colorado. And we move in with my wife's parents. And I start working back to square one, start working construction again, and then go back and work my security job again. During this, doing some cool security work. I did some security for Zach Wilde, where I got paid to follow him around during the crowd while he's playing solos, while standing a foot away. Did the same thing with Buddy Guy. A lot of cool stuff there. And then ended up trying to get some gigs again and ended up doing it. Ended up putting together a couple gigs. I'm leaving out one thing. When I was in Georgia, I actually flew out to Utah every year and played in a country band for a weekend every year and maybe a couple more bars all the times I was there. But so I was coming back to Utah anyway. So I still had a few connections. So I threw together another little three-piece band, played some more gigs here and there, and did a few fill-in gigs with people. Nothing major. Kind of stopped writing altogether, and I'm still in that phase now. This is 4 years later, and I still don't think I've written but a couple of tunes. Ended up getting out of my in-laws, renting my own place. Ended up becoming a truck driver. Our place wasn't far from a place where they had a truck driving school. My wife talked me into doing it, which I'm glad she did. I went and got a truck driver's license, started driving a truck. Bought my own house up in North Ogden, Utah. Started doing really well, put my band back together, and started doing gigs again. While I'm here this time, I ended up joining Doug Lane's band until they let me go for lack of chemistry. Ended up joining JD and the Brass Saddle Band. Same thing. They let me go for lack of chemistry. But still, you know, I'm thinking it's dried up. You know, I'm getting older. I'm thinking, fuck it, I don't even enjoy doing this shit anymore. But I'm still doing a gig here and there. Maybe 10 gigs a year, nothing major. Still teaching guitar out at the Park City schools for, you know, a couple of semesters a year. You know, fast forward to COVID hit, and then everybody's kind of in the same position. Nobody's playing anywhere. So I start doing Facebook Lives, just improv and jazz tunes, and I'm starting to pick up some steam doing that, kind of liking it. And then I ended up starting this podcast. And, I've been not counting the 4 years I was in, went back to Georgia. I've been in Utah now for like 17 years. I was in Georgia, like, you know, I'm from South Carolina originally. Lived there a couple years, Nashville for a year, but basically was in Georgia for 26, 27 years. Now 17 years here in Utah. And right after COVID kind of let up, I started getting more gigs. I've got, you know, 7 or 8 lined up now. Got the Jeff Lawrence and War Horse going again. Did record one original song with the guy won't release. The guy that wrote it with me won't release it for some reason. I don't know what his deal is. But I'm going to probably release some new music in the following year. I'm still really haven't written anything, but I can kind of feel the juices flowing again. Probably going to be kind of like a jazz fusion record, you know, like a Joe Satriani, but not so heavy type thing. Like I said, I still got gigs lined up all over right now. I got 5 or 6 lined up for August, September, November. But that's kind of a run through of my Utah stuff. And I know I'm leaving stuff out. I'm for sure leaving a lot out, but basically the gist of it. But I ended up having a better music career. I spent 8 years in Utah just playing music for a living. I that's all I did. I didn't have to have any other jobs. I felt like king of the world for a while. I had my wife, who is beautiful, the most beautiful person in the world. I was dating a beautiful girl, you know, 10 years younger than me. I don't know. At the time, I thought that was relevant. Still is, even though she's 40. Going to work in the mountains every day with my Les Paul and Strat and stuff is crazy. So, I'm leaving out. I did want to touch on this. While I'm living in Park City, they have the Sundance Film Festival there. Ended up, a lot of stars come. I ended up meeting all kinds of different movie stars. Antonio Banderas, Oprah, Sandra Bullock, Matt Damon, Ben Affleck. a lot of different people up there. I ended up playing a song with Woody Harrelson and the Gibson store up there, Hound Dog. Got pictures of it somewhere. Ended up Billy Gibbons, ZZ Top, played my Les Paul one night because they had brought him a Epiphone Les Paul to play at a show and he wouldn't do it. So bar owner knew I had a Les Paul and brought it up there. So like I said, made a living playing music. It's all I ever wanted to do, and I did it for a while. Anyway, that's going to wrap it up for today. And on the next podcast, I'm going to tell you what I'm going to do from here on out. All right, I got to make an addendum to this podcast. I left out a key thing in this whole Utah mess. So here's this story. How I ended up teaching the governor of Utah's son guitar lessons and going to the governor's mansion once a week. So I'm watching the news one night. I'm probably two or three beers in, maybe a toke or two in. I don't know, back those days. And I see the governor, John Huntsman, at the time. He went on to become ambassador to Russia, or ambassador to China for Obama, and ambassador to Russia for Trump, and then ran for governor again this last time, but lost. Comes from a really wealthy family, and probably the most wealthiest family in Utah, Huntsman's. But anyway, I'm watching the news one day, and I knew he played keyboards, and they had him on there, and he was about to go, he was going to sit in with REO Speedwagon and play keyboards on a song or two. He was pretty good. I think he was Roll with the Changes or something. I heard he mentioned on the news that he had two kids who were musicians, one that was a drummer and one trying to learn guitar. So I thought, well, you know, at the time I'm giving lessons to everybody all over the place, so I'm thinking, I just came up with this idea. So I immediately got online, found how to email the governor's assistant, which I can't remember her name now. I think it was Judith or something, kind of elderly lady. And I emailed saying, I'll give Governor Huntsman's sons, or son, four sons, guitar lessons, and for free. I'll come down there, I'll do it in the mansion for free. You don't even have to pay me, just to put it on my resume. I didn't think much of it, but I got a response the next day saying, yeah, he's very interested. His name's Will. He's 17. And he, I think he was 17, maybe 16. He's interested. He has a guitar already. He plays a little bit. But we're not going to do it free. We're going to pay you your normal price. So set up a time. So here I am. I'm every Thursday for like almost maybe a year, I would go to the governor's mansion and go in and wait for Will to get out of school. It was, he easily had to wait like 20 minutes. He'd get home from school. It's weird because I'd see Abby Huntsman around, who's now, you know, she was on The View for a while, and then I'd see Mary Kay Huntsman, or, you know, it's weird. It was, you know, the very weirdest thing is this was like right after 9/11 and all that. Quite a few years after that, but I mean, they didn't even check me for anything. I don't know if they did a background check online on me or anything. If they did, they didn't ask for any information. But I'd get there, they didn't go through my guitar case. They did nothing. Half the time, I'd be honest, I would like be stoned. I'd go in there after I smoked, took a few tokes. I don't do that anymore, but I don't even smoke weed anymore. But back then, and I just sit in the governor's mansion, and they're like little, they had like a den downstairs. And he wasn't a great student. He was a cool kid. He was but he was already good. Like, he could pick up stuff. He could like play Eruption by Van Halen and stuff without me showing him. So I would teach him the scales, and I did teach him a lot of licks he didn't know before, but he kind of didn't really care that much about it. We ended up talking most of the time. You could tell he was kind of sad because he didn't spend a lot of time with his dad, which I think is what he really wanted. We ended up talking later on. Now he's like a merchant marine or in the Navy or something. I can't remember which one it was. He was stationed, maybe it's an Air Force. He was stationed down in Pensacola, Florida, last time I talked to him, and he was kind of writing country songs, which is kind of cool. He was in the rock then. But one time I remember big time, I was down there and waiting on him to get home from school, and I saw a digital camera. This is before, you know, everybody had a good phone camera, and it was just laying right beside me. So I just turned it on and started flipping through the pictures, and I saw like pictures of George Bush and all kinds of stuff. And one time there, George Bush came there, and because they were doing some kind of thing where the governor of New Mexico and Utah's governor, and I think maybe Arizona's, they were all getting together with George Bush when he was president to do some kind of a climate thing. I don't know what it was, but we ended up like going out in the hall and playing acoustic guitar, like classical guitar, me and Will, for while George Bush just kind of walked past us. And that's kind of cool. So I did that about a year, and then we actually, one time he invited me to what they call the governor's ball. And the governor's ball was this thing where I was totally naive and stupid about this whole situation, but I didn't realize that the governor's ball was like a fundraiser thing where you had a band there, like a really good band, and the governor would play guitar in it, and I mean, not sorry, keyboards in it, and Will was going to get up and play guitar in his dad's band. And they, like, the drummer for the band was like one of the weathermen here on Channel 2. But what I didn't realize is it costs like $1,000 per plate to get in. And I'm not even invited. The son invited me, and he's a 17-year-old kid. So I'm thinking, sure, I'll pick my son up, who was like 2 at the time, and my girlfriend, who is now my wife. And we went down, not thinking much of it. I mean, I'm invited by the governor's kid, but then his mom comes up. I'm like, what are you doing here? And I'm like, Will wanted me to come and watch him play. And she's like kind of smirky and goes, well, I'll make sure you get a plate. And I was like, okay. And then luckily I saw one of my other students' mom there, they're very wealthy people, and I kind of live near the governor's mansion. And she came up to me and she goes, oh, come on, I'll get you a plate. So we just grabbed a plate and got food. I had no idea that it was like $1,000, $5,000 for a plate of food to donate to this thing. And I was just totally naive to the whole thing, but ended up watching him play with his dad and all that. So it's kind of cool, but it's always surprised me the lack of security. Like one time I'm over there teaching him, and I'm trying to hook him up with my other student who I was just talking about, his mom that I live near there, is my other student. I'm trying to put them together because they're both talented and they live a couple of blocks away from each other and maybe they could play together. So I kind of pitched it to them. They didn't know each other, but they ended up like talking on the phone or something. So I'm over there. I teach Will a lesson at the governor's mansion, and he goes, give me a ride over to this your other student's house after this, and I'm gonna go play with him. I said, all right, you need to ask somebody or anything? No, don't worry about it. So he gets in my car, and I just drive off with the governor's kid. Nobody knew it. Nobody said nothing. Nobody cared. I'm not some crazy weirdo, but I mean, if I was, it was kind of crazy. But he probably could have kicked my ass anyway. But still, you know what I'm saying. But anyway, that's kind of my story on how I became teacher of the governor's mansion, and how I ended up meeting George Bush. Kind of another quick George Bush story. During the same, now this was about a year later because George Bush wasn't the president anymore. He had done his 8 years, and now it was like Obama against Romney, Mitt Romney. So this time I'm teaching a class up in Park City, a guitar class up in Park City, Utah. And right behind my classroom, there's this big field, and here comes a Black Hawk helicopter landing in this field. I mean, right behind my classroom, and it's George Bush again. I mean, there's Secret Service everywhere. They come in and they lock down the school. I had no idea this was going to go on. So my students are locked in the school. I'm locked in the school. I had no idea about the protocol of the lockdown. And he was coming in to go over to Mitt Romney. Had a place in Park City when they were doing a fundraiser thing, and he was going to show up. And I guess they had no other place to land other than this giant field behind the school. I mean, this was all worked out ahead of time. Nobody bothered to tell me. So I'm kind of freaking out. So, during my whole musical career, I've met Jimmy Carter, Bill Clinton, and George Bush. kind of strange. But anyway, that's my addendum to this Utah podcast, peeps.
La, la, la.